The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Today we're tackling a truly monumental figure, a person who stands at this incredible intersection of history, faith, politics, really power itself, the Prophet Muhammad.
It's hard to overstate his influence. I mean, if you had named the single most influential human being in history,
he had to be on that list.
Absolutely. The person whose legacy continues to shape laws, ethics, and, you know, geopolitics for billions of people today.
And yet, because he's so influential, the discussion around him is often, well, it's hyper-polarized, isn't it?
It really is. On one side, you have this sort of simplistic veneration, and on the other, just hostile stereotypes. It leaves very little room in the middle.
Which is why this deep dive into Jonathan A.C. Brown's summary of his life and legacy feels so essential. It's about moving beyond all that noise. Exactly. Brown argues for what he calls a middle path, and that's really our mission today. We want to understand the complexity of the man.
Not just endorse a caricature. And Brown's approach uses rigorous historical methods, treating Muhammad as a real 7th century man, while still respecting his profound sacred significance for over a billion Muslims.
Yeah, you need a guide who can navigate both of those worlds, you know? Someone who can show us how one man's life, rooted in tribal Arabia, became the spiritual and political blueprint for a global civilization.
Yeah.
That's the phenomenon we're trying to understand.
Okay, so let's talk about our guide then, Jonathan A.C. Brown. His credentials are, they're pretty serious.
Yeah.
He holds a prestigious chair of Islamic civilization at Georgetown University.
And that's the key thing. He's not just a historian reading, you know, translated texts. Mm. His PhD is in New Eastern languages.
So he's working directly with the original Arabic sources.
Right. The Quran, the foundational biographies called the Sirah, the huge body of traditions known as the Hadith. He's not relying on someone else's interpretation.
What's really fascinating, though, is how he blends those academic skills with his personal perspective. He's a Western academic, fluent in critical history, but he also converted to Islam.
And that conversion gives him a, well, crucial intellectual advantage. He's fluent in the skepticism of Western historical analysis and the deep classical scholarly tradition of Islam. He sort of holds a key to both rooms.
But I have to ask, does that personal faith make some purely secular historians, I don't know, question his objectivity? How does he handle that tension?
He addresses it head on, actually. A lot of his work, like his earlier book, Misquoting Muhammad, is about the mechanics of tradition. Mm. How was the legacy collected and interpreted?
So it's about the process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He establishes his intellectual honesty by saying, look, he's not going to sanitize difficult moments, but he also won't uncritically accept hostile portrayals that have been around for centuries. The goal is to understand the phenomena, not to preach or debunk.
And that honesty leads directly to the book's central thesis. Brown says Muhammad isn't some static historical artifact we can pin down to the year 632.
No, he's a dynamic living symbol, a legacy that has been continuously constructed and reinterpreted for 1,400 years.
To capture that, the book uses this kind of dual approach.
Yeah, first you get the chronological journey. The life of the historical man, from his birth around 570 in Mecca to his death in Medina. So his roles as a spiritual figure, a social reformer, a political leader.
But then, and this is where it gets really interesting, the book pivots to what he calls the thematic and historiographical journey.
Right. How did that life story get transformed into a sacred blueprint for, well, for civilization, for law, theology, ethics, all of it?
And he's grappling with a huge methodological challenge here. I mean, if your primary sources were written by believers decades or centuries after the fact, how do you distinguish historical fact from pious narrative?
That sounds like a huge chasm.
It does, but Brown insists that the gap need not be a chasm. He argues that those pious narratives are themselves historically important. They tell us how later generations understood his life.
So the book's ambition is really to explain the whole phenomenon of Muhammad. It makes it relevant whether you're coming at this from a place of faith or just academic curiosity.
Okay, let's jump into that life story, the context. Brown really dispels that common stereotype of Muhammad emerging from a barbaric desert.
He does. Mecca was home to the Quraysh tribe. This was a sophisticated, powerful merchant society controlling major trade routes.
And Muhammad himself was an orphan in this complex society. What? His early reputation was as Al-Amin.
The trustworthy one.
Yeah.
And his marriage to Khadija, who was a wealthy, independent merchant herself, was just essential. She gave him the stability, both spiritual and financial, for his mission to even begin.
And his message of radical monotheism. It was so shaped by that Meccan environment, wasn't it?
Totally. He saw the injustices caused by this huge wealth gap, how orphans and widows were treated, how the system was based on blood ties. His demand for submission to one god was also a powerful call for social justice.
Which, of course, fundamentally challenged the tribal elites.
Made him an enemy, absolutely. And that leads to the pivotal moment in 622. The Hijra, the migration to Medina. This is where the whole story shifts.
He goes from a persecuted preacher to
the head of a multi-faith political community. It's a dramatic transformation.
And the Constitution of Medina, which Brown highlights, seems like a remarkable document for its time. It shows his political genius.
It's one of history's earliest examples of written pluralistic governance. And it wasn't just a treaty between Muslims.
No.
It was a formal agreement creating a unified community, an ummah, that bound together the immigrant Muslims, the Medinan converts, and the various Jewish and pagan tribes.
It set up rules for mutual defense, shared taxes.
And, crucially, it put judicial authority under Muhammad. It reveals him as this brilliant, pragmatic political leader, creating a state decades before you see anything like it in Europe.
Now, his conflicts, like the battles of Badr and Uhud, are often cited by critics. Brown insists we have to contextualize them.
We have to. There were struggles for survival against a Meccan enemy that was trying to wipe out this new community.
And if his military success shows his, you know, grit, his diplomacy shows his strategic foresight.
The Treaty of Hudaybiyah is the perfect example. At the time, it looked like a humiliating concession. The Muslims had to accept these really disadvantageous terms.
So why was it a masterstroke?
Because for the very first time, the powerful Quraysh in Mecca negotiated with Muhammad as a peer. As a political entity, not a religious cult.
That recognition was everything.
It was. It broke their diplomatic isolation and paved the way for the conquest of Mecca a couple of years later, which was remarkably almost bloodless.
And what he did after that victory is just. It's central to his legacy. No vengeance, a general amnesty for his former enemies. It cemented his reputation for clemency.
Now, we do have to address the parts of his life that get the most scrutiny today, specifically his personal life and his marriages.
Brown is really rigorous here. He insists on placing them in their 7th century context.
Right. So you have to see his multiple marriages to Aisha, to Zainab, not through a 21st century romantic lens, but through the lens of tribal Arabia, where marriage was about alliances, social stability, supporting widows.
It was a tool of statecraft and social welfare.
Exactly. And Brown also highlights that women like Khadija and Aisha were absolutely critical to preserving and transmitting his traditions. Aisha became one of the most important scholars of early Islam. It really challenges the stereotype of women being excluded.
So after Muhammad passes away, the community faces this huge challenge. Not just political succession, but how do you keep the spiritual and legal guidance going?
This is where he truly becomes the Uswa Hasana, the excellent model.
It sparked this monumental scholarly project.
One of the biggest in history. The community realized they needed to codify his normative way of life, his sayings, his actions, everything, into what's called the Sunnah. This huge effort resulted in the Hadith literature, making every detail of his life a source of guidance.
So if the Sunnah provided the legal framework, Brown also introduces this other dimension, the mystical Muhammad.
Yes, the Sufi perspective. And it often contrasts with the purely legalistic view. For the mystics, he's the perfect man al-insan alchemy.
Not just a historical figure.
No, he's the ultimate channel of divine grace.
Yeah.
They talk about the light of Muhammad, a sort of pre-eternal spiritual essence. Mm. It's a much softer, more devotional side of his legacy that's all about inner compassion and humility.
It's that versatility that's so striking. A legal path, a political path, a spiritual path, all at once.
Okay, let's try to synthesize Brown's core themes. Why does this analysis matter now?
I think the first, and maybe the most vital theme, is that context is a moral imperative. Brown is just. He's unwavering on this. You have to judge Muhammad's actions within the brutal political and ethical world of 7th century Arabia.
Right. You can't just lift an action out of its time and judge it by modern, secular, Western standards. That's just bad history. It's not about excusing it. It's about understanding it accurately.
Precisely. The second theme is the multifaceted paragon. The fact that he was a prophet, a jurist, military strategist, a mystic, and a family man, all at the same time. That's critical. And that explains his enduring appeal.
It does. Whatever you're looking for, a model for governance, for personal virtue, for a connection to the divine, there's a facet of his life that speaks to that.
And the final one, the woven fabric of history and faith. Brown reminds us that our sources were compiled by believers.
So history and sacred memory are just. They're completely mixed together. Brown says the gap between the Muhammad of history and the prophet of faith need not be a chasm. Mm. He shows that rigorous scholarship and deep respect can actually reinforce each other.
The book is full of these memorable insights. Let's touch on a few key ideas that really sum up his arguments.
We mentioned the first one already, but it's really his thesis statement. The gap between the historical Muhammad and the prophet of faith need not be a chasm. It's the intellectual roadmap he offers. You don't have to choose.
I found the second idea so powerful for understanding Islamic law, the idea that the Sunnah is the grammar of the Islamic message.
It's a brilliant metaphor, isn't it? If the Quran is the divine vocabulary, justice, patience, charity, the prophet's life is the practical syntax. It shows you how to arrange those words into a coherent, livable life.
That explains why every little detail of his life was considered so important.
It really does. And the third idea connects all this directly to today. Brown argues that modern controversies over the prophet are not truly about a medieval man. They are proxy battles over power, dignity, and the contested definition of the sacred in a secular age.
That reframes everything. So when you see debates about cartoons, it's less about theology.
And more about post-colonial sensitivities, a struggle for respect on a global stage where one civilization feels its most sacred symbol is being trivialized or attacked by another.
So let's wrap this up with real-life applications. If you engage with Brown's work, what can you actually apply to your understanding of the world?
Well, for non-Muslims, the application is clear: fostering genuine understanding. The book is an essential antidote to all the noise and prejudice. It replaces flat caricatures with a complex human reality. That's a crucial tool for interfaith dialogue.
And beyond faith, there are these powerful lessons in leadership. I mean, leaders today could study his political genius. That ability to build diverse coalitions like he did with the Constitution of Medina.
And think about his strategic patience. The Treaty of Hudaybiyah shows how to sacrifice a short-term gain for long-term recognition. And the conquest of Mecca shows the power of being magnanimous after a victory. It's a masterclass in leadership.
And finally, that spiritual dimension, the focus on inner virtues, compassion, humility, that provides a universal path for personal growth, really.
Yeah, the book reminds us that emulating him is supposed to be about inner transformation, not just, you know, copying 7th century customs. That's a universal lesson.
Well, what surprised me most in this deep dive was just the sheer sophistication of the Constitution of Medina. We have this image of 7th century Arabia as being purely primitive. Mm. But to see the construction of a political community with explicit mechanisms for arbitration among Muslims, Jews, and other tribes, it's just an astonishing historical feat. It really changed my perspective.
For me, it was that metaphor. The Sunnah as the grammar of Islam. It just instantly clarifies why the details of his life are so central for observant Muslims. It turns what could be a dry biography into the living, breathing reality of their faith.
At the end of the day, the lasting value of Brown's work is the paradigm shift it promotes. It moves us away from these polemical battles towards a much more nuanced understanding. The story of Muhammad isn't just one man's story.
No, it's the story of the civilization that grew in all its complexity. Right in his shadow.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.